Hello, this is Daryl here, sending love as always. Thank you for tuning in. I just want to say, if you like this interview, you can check our website for companion workbooks, action guides, tools, checklists, templates, and show notes with links for everything mentioned on the call. Just visit bestbusinesscoach.ca. That's best, B-E-S-T, businesscoach.ca. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Daryl Urbanski, and welcome to the Best Business Podcast. My mission is to help create 200 new multimillionaire business owners. How? You'll do better when you know better. In my interviews, you'll hear from self-made millionaires, seven-figure business owners, authors, and world-class experts sharing how they did it so you can too, without experiencing the same obstacles they did. Now, if you like this interview, please share it with a friend you think will benefit. They'll appreciate it, and I will as well. You can also connect with me on social media. Look for Daryl Urbanski, D-A-R-Y-L, Urban Ski, U-R-B-A-N-S-K-I, and add me so we can be friends. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy what I've prepared for you right here, right now. Hello, my friend, and welcome. I'm Daryl Urbanski, and today I have something special for you. What you're about to hear today isn't part of what we usually do. Today, I'd like to spend some personal time with you and for us to get to know each other better. So to start, I'll be sharing some of my life stories with you, plus introducing you to some of the grandfathers of my business acumen. In fact, the next few weeks, I'll be introducing you to the grandfathers of my education, plus you're going to get select never-released recordings of people interviewing me where I give some of my best business and life advice ever. We all learn from various people we know for various amounts of time. Some people we share just a single impactful moment together, others a full weekend, and some of us have people in our lives who have always been there, always guiding us, and always sharing our paths. Well, I would like to share some of these people who have guided me with you. Your life really can change based on the things you learn and the people you meet, so please enjoy this special series of classic and never-released recordings in this 10-part interview series. Enjoy.
Daryl Urbanski is a number one best-selling business author. He's a business coach, martial artist, a tribal and database marketer, an entrepreneur, and a student of life. Daryl, it's a real pleasure to have you on the Defining Success podcast.
Thank you, Zeb. It's an honor to be here. Appreciate it.
So why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background? You know, tell us a little bit about yourself and your career path.
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess to start off with, right now, you know, you mentioned the database and tribal marketing, and a lot of that comes from direct response, and direct response is kind of the prevailing form of marketing on the internet. There's still some brand advertisers out there, but AdWords and a lot of these platforms are very much designed around results-based marketing. So maybe I can talk a little bit about my background with direct response and that style of marketing. I was doing internet marketing before I even really knew exactly what it was. Ever since I was a kid, I had a really positive image in my head of what it meant to be a business owner, that was set by my uncle who lived in Toronto. And I tried a lot of different things as a kid. I mean, you know, you do the paper routes. I remember I used to babysit. I used to shovel driveways with a buddy, and we tried to organize teams of people. You know, I'm up in Canada, so, or I grew up in Canada, so lots of snow there. So every winter, there was just lots of little things I did. I was just trying to figure out a way to make it. And at least with marketing, you know, that I did this program called Katimovic, where I got to travel Canada for 9 months. And I worked on the West Coast in BC for 3 months, and then in Alberta, and then in Quebec. And when I came back, it had left such an impression on me. I wanted to go back to the West Coast, but I didn't really know how to get over there and how to, like, set up my life. So this is the early days of the internet. I went on, and I found an online classified ad for a room to rent, and I called the lady up and made arrangements. And then I knew, all right, I have a place to live. I was just in my final year of high school as well. So okay. I made arrangements to go to school out there, and then same thing using the internet. And then I needed a job. And so before I even really knew what I was doing, I went on the local city's Chamber of Commerce website.
Uh-huh.
And I found a list of all the businesses and their email addresses, and I basically just scraped all the email addresses. And before I even really knew what I was doing, I had a 3-email campaign where I emailed all the business owners trying to set up an interview for when I got out there. And first one was like about me, and you know, the first one was like cover letter and my resume. The next one was a PowerPoint presentation. The third one was like a wrapping up, like, hey, I have a few spots when I first get there left. Uh-huh. I didn't really know what I was doing. And so A lot of it is just that, you know, necessity sparks a lot of innovation. A lot of, for me anyways, it's just been a lot of fumbling around and just figuring it out, and just out of raw necessity, having to figure out a better way to do it. I mean, when you talk to a lot of people who are overnight successes, you hear about the 10 to 15 years of, you know, that work that went into the overnight success. And I think it's the same thing in a lot of different fields. And really, a lot of it is just about getting started and just being clear, I think, on what your focus is, your intent, and just making sure that you stay focused and keep with it. So that was how I lined up those jobs early on when I moved out there. And it wasn't a business, so to speak, in the sense of, you know, I was trying to set up, you know, like staff and an office and everything. But I was trying to get something off the ground and running. I wanted to set up a life out there, and I wanted to have income and a certain, you know, lifestyle. So I was very much designing my life and planning it even at that early stage. So that's kind of what first got me into marketing, and I didn't even really know what I was doing. I had a few, when I went out there, finished high school and worked. I had a number of different jobs while I was out there, just like trade stuff and security at nightclubs and working at like a Costco kind of store, things like that. And then I got into trying to start a few different business ideas with friends. And one thing that really inspired me was alternative energy. I was really into this thing called Earthships, and I was working at a hostel, a youth hostel, and I wanted to have some sort of, you know, renewable energy, like, you know, youth hostel, like a bed and breakfast kind of place. So I found some investors, and they gave me around $50,000-$60,000. The economic development officer wrote me a letter of endorsement, went to the bank. They approved me for a loan for $250,000. That, with the investment money, I was supposed to buy and renovate a property and turn it into basically like a, you know, like a youth hostel, a bed and breakfast or overnight thing. And I crapped my pants. I was like 19. I hadn't had a girlfriend. I hadn't had a girlfriend for a year. I just bought a car. It'd been like 6 months. And I was like, you know, I hadn't even lived on my own for a year yet. I'm about to marry, or it had been like a year and a half. I was about to marry this, you know, $300,000. So... I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned just through trying, and it's one of those things where you say, like, you'll surprise yourself with what you can accomplish and how much faith other people put in you. And so for a lot of people, they just lack the confidence and faith in themselves. And so for me, I didn't really have a support network of other business owners or people to turn to or a mentor or anything like that. So I ended up backing out and not doing that. But to me, it always left a huge imprint in my mind that a lot of people would have confidence in me if I would just have confidence in myself. So it was, yeah, it took me a couple of months of like kind of soul searching. I just decided that, you know, if I was successful, I would be doing that for 10 years. And to me, if I wasn't successful, I was like, I was going to spend the rest of my life trying to pay that money back.
Yeah.
And so I was just nervous. I didn't feel like I was settled and established enough to take off with it. So that was that component of it.
Now, so with that decision, I mean, did you just decide, you just said, you know, thanks, but no thanks? I mean, how did that work?
Well, yeah, basically, because, I mean, I was the guy behind it. And so I was, you know, I was already talking to a couple of different realtors about, because it was going to be in a Soyuz. So Soyuz is like the second busiest border crossing between Canada and the U.S. It's a beautiful climate. It's actually Canada's only desert, they say. There's another one in Alberta, but official desert is the Soyuz. And they have this whole Spanish villa theme to the city. So I just, yeah, I mean, I had the loan. I gave the investors their money back. Yeah, I just kind of walked away from it.
Okay.
And I just kind of was working for like another 8 months before I decided that, you know, I needed to do something with my life. And to be honest, like at that age, there was so much energy and effort and thought that went into that business plan and all that whole ordeal. When I kind of went against it, I just felt like I was in limbo. I felt like I had no real purpose. I was just kind of floating. So I decided to move back to Ontario to maybe just go to university and to be a good son and just kind of help out the family. And so that's what I did. I went back to Kingston, Ontario. But what I didn't anticipate was meeting a girl and falling in love about a couple of months after I got there. Maybe 2 months I'd been back. I met this girl, and I was supposed to be going to Queen's University. I'd been accepted into their commerce program, but my family, we didn't really come from money. And so I was going to have to take out a loan to pay for my school fees. And I was going to probably end up living at home because my parents lived in that city. And after, you know, any of us that have moved out and then tried to move back in, it's always an adjustment, it's always an adjustment going back.
Yeah.
And then I just met this beautiful woman, and I was just coming home from a martial arts class, and she was reading a book over my shoulder. I was reading this book called The Tao of Physics, and it had a yin-yang on the front of it. And she was talking about her time in Japan. In the summer between her third and fourth year, she'd gone to Japan. She didn't want to make minimum wage working at a mall. And a friend she grew up with, a Japanese girl she grew up with, said, you should go teach English in Tokyo. And so she did. And through over 4 months, she worked, you know, 6-7 days a week while she was there. But she made enough to cover her travel expenses, her living expenses while she was there, and come back with $10,000.
Oh, awesome.
So she wanted to go back. She just graduated, wanted to go back, pay off the rest of her student loan, and make more money and travel. And I had a decision to make. Either I was going to stay home and live with my parents and take out a loan and go to school, or I was going to follow this beautiful woman I'd fallen in love with and travel the world, train martial arts in Japan, and potentially make a lot of money. So school, it wasn't a difficult decision. I ended I ended up going to Japan, and that's where I got involved in a couple of different opportunities. I started looking into vending machines as a business. I really got to observe the way they use robotics and automation to streamline workflow processes. And it was a really interesting experience. I was going to say opportunity, but it was a really interesting experience, because when you go to somewhere and you don't know the language and you're foreign to the culture, you really take a unique position as an observer. So I think that instead of where people who might grow up there would take certain things for granted, I think in a lot of ways I would compare, oh, what we have in Canada and what we have there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and being foreign in that country, a lot of companies wouldn't want to hire you outside of just being a contractor, a freelance contractor. Because even when you get an apartment, it's legal for them to discriminate against you, because you could just up and hop on a plane and leave and stiff the landlord for rent.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, it was really good, because you know Tokyo's not cheap, and you have to kind of hustle and get out there and market and level up. And then going back to internet marketing, I was teaching English, and I hated it, and I wanted to get out of it. Nothing wrong, lots of people do really well and love it, it's a fulfilling career for them, but I just, you know, I wanted to do more. And there was this company that was doing consulting work with Microsoft, and they were looking for new consultants. And I felt like, man, if I could get in on that, that would be like a golden ticket. Be like, you know, working at Disney and, you know, these big companies. So I went to the job interview, and it was a group job interview. It was one of the most unique that I'd ever done. There was like 30 people. There was only two positions. They had us do all sorts of group games and activities. Okay. Like we would sit at a desk with a brown envelope, and then they would say, okay, this brown envelope represents your email inbox. I'm going to say go. You guys all open it, and you have to prioritize and answer as many of the emails as you can.
Okay.
And it was just it was a bunch of printouts, and so they're like, go. Like, and you're sitting at this old school desk with like the chair attached to the desk with 30 other people, and you're like, what? Like, how does this relate to consult? Right? Like, it was just a really unique way, and I didn't think I got the job, but when I went home that night, I went on Hallmark.com, where they. I don't know if you remember e-cards, but they used to be like the big thing on the internet. You'd send everyone an e-card, and Hallmark would let you go, and for free, you could just pick a date and then pick a card, and you'd write your little message, and you'd say who you were sending it to and who it was from, and you just, you know, click schedule, and it would be sent. And so the hiring manager, her name was Melissa, I want to say. I have a cousin, Melissa Michelle, and I always get them mixed up, but Melissa, I'm pretty sure. And I just went home that night, and I didn't think I was the top candidate out of those 30 people, but I decided that, like, the whole tortoise and the hare, that I would win the long run. And so I sat down, I did like 6 months or 8 months of e-cards, sending her like one every other week. And because I was able to pick the dates they were being sent, I remember one was like for Valentine's Day. It was a couple days before. Hey, hope you have a great Valentine's Day. You know, I sent her like a Valentine's Day card. So months go by, like 3 months, 4 months down the road, I get a phone call. And it's this lady, Melissa, and she's so happy to hear from me. And, oh, Daryl, I'm glad you answered, and your number still works. And, you know, I appreciate all the cards you've been sending. And I had no idea. Like, this is right. Like, I said it and forget it and walked away, right? And she invited me in, and I was like, sure. So I went and sat down and got told, hey, we have a new client. It's Shinsei Bank. You know, we're going to be helping with real estate contracts and some team building stuff and cultural stuff. And, you know, this is the curriculum. This is the fee. These are the hours. There was like no screening. There was no interview process. It was just like, here you go. And so that was kind of my second experience of like, hey, this marketing thing, you know, it's kind of, it can be really powerful. So, yeah, and that's how I got started with that. And then the other part, when in Japan, you just start noticing that, you know, especially in a busy city like New York or something, the days fly by so fast. You know, especially like having grown up in a smaller, you know, Canada is not as densely populated as America, and it's a smaller town as well. You notice in the big city how fast the pace of life is and how quickly the hours go by. And so started realizing that even as freelance and great, I was able to bill $60 to $120 per hour with some of the different clients that I had. Because I had multiple companies I was signing up, not just the Shinsei Bank, but you just realize that there's still a cap, right? That even if my schedule's full, I'm only going to make so much income. And so you started, and this goes back to the whole, you know, at the beginning, just saying, just having focus and direction and intent, and those overnight successes at the 10 years of someone just trying to, like, just trying to crack that nut, just kind of working at it. And so, yeah, I mean, along the way, I've tried different models. I've done vending machine models, which are really good, trying to model after Japan. They automate everything that they can. And just really try to focus on the ability to scale. One of the great lessons that I learned was actually from Michael Gerber, and he talks about the rule of 10,000. Mm-hmm. You know, and that you want to try and think about how would you do 10,000 of something, and just get that perspective, because you as one person, and this is a lot of entrepreneurs, they have this desire to create or fulfill some sort of need and desire and build something greater than themselves, but they're always the focal point of it. And as an entrepreneur, you don't scale. So, yeah, I mean, that was just kind of the next lesson that I think I learned, was that I needed to find some way to get out of being the singing and dancing pony myself. And, you know, and that's something I think we all fall back into, because no one will be as good as you. You know, if you were to try to have an assistant or someone help do the interviews on the podcast, they would never do the interviews as well as you would in your mind's eye, right? And so they would always be a beta version of yourself. And so you just start, you know, hitting different problems. And I mean, I think one of my biggest keys to my success was just relentless focus and surrounding myself with as many people, like-minded people as I could, because you learn from each other. That's probably even why these types of interview are of benefit to your listeners, is because in their day-to-day lives, they may not have access to people that are on the same path as them or trying to accomplish the same goals as them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely does. And that's definitely one of the reasons why I brought about this podcast, is I wanted to give people I'll tell you, when I started listening to podcasts, is I started listening to Pat Flynn. Mm-hmm. And it was literally just like all the ideas that people were sharing were the same things that I was experiencing, but it was like light bulbs were just like constantly going off in my head. And as I was jogging or running around, and that's exactly the kind of feeling that I wanted to have for our listeners. So, and that by connecting them with people who are in the industry doing what they're doing and being successful at it, like yourself.
Well, and that's exactly it. And this is something, you know, I consider myself a humble person, but I definitely take credit for this, is one of the things that I did, that a lot of people, they take the power of the internet for granted. I mean, it's phenomenal. It is everybody now, like before the internet, if you had a question or a problem, your resources to draw from to find a solution would be your own personal training and experience. Mm-hmm. The training experience of the friends around you and people you could access or write a letter to. And then your library. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And the library, you had to have to go down to the library, and you have to go and find the section, and then walk over to the section, and then scan all the books and take the books you thought might have the answer, and then go sit down and then flip through all these pages. Now with my mobile device, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I can look up who's the world's leading expert in X, find them on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever, and send them a direct message.
Yep.
And it'll take me less than 5 minutes to do that. And so that's why I say I take credit for that, is that's something I started to do. Even though when I was up in Canada, when I got really, really serious about wanting to be successful, I started, you know, and some of my friends complain, say that, you know, like I've changed, and I have changed. I didn't want to hang out and just watch TV. I wasn't satisfied with that anymore.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's great. I know you're my buddy I grew up with, but you know, all you do is smoke dope, play video games. I want to do something more than that. Like I can't sit and watch, I don't even own a TV. Like I'll watch a movie with friends or something, but you know, I've got more to do. So I got books to read and things to do and places I want to go and people to meet. And so that was it. I just stopped, you know, I took a look at my life and how I was spending my time and really started to try to be more strategic and smarter with it. You know, I never went anywhere without having my headphones plugged in and be listening to a podcast like this or some sort of training tapes or just something that would just educate me and help me become more than I was. Mm-hmm. The people that I would talk to on a daily basis, I would connect. I'd go to conferences and I'd connect with as many people as I could. And I do my damnedest to stay in touch with them. And I would just volunteer to like, hey, you know, what's your project? Like I would stop my work on my project and I would sit on and get on the phone with someone for an hour and just like purely just help them. Nothing in it for me. Let's figure out how you can make an extra $10,000 in your business. Cause I just wanted the experience. It was like a muscle, yep. Right? If I wanted to be able to do 100 push-ups in 30 seconds flat, you just need to keep doing it and doing it. And I recognize that my business and the situation I was in, I only dealt with a small sliver of problems. And I wanted to be able to know how to prevent things before they even happened. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I really just started connecting with people. Facebook was a great way. Start looking up leading experts in whatever field, guys that I'd read their books. I just reach out, connect to them. And then same thing, if I ever saw that they posted something on their wall or if I ever heard that they were doing some sort of, I would just volunteer. I would, you know, be a sounding board for ideas. I'd share with them everything I could. I'd be an open book, just be really selfless. And even when I do an interview like this, you know, I give away everything I can to help other people because it's just, it's who you know, Jim Rohn says this, you know, I'm going to brutalize the quote, but it's,
okay.
But it's, you know, the main benefit out of setting a goal isn't achieving the goal itself. It's becoming the person you have to be to accomplish that, whatever that goal is. And that's, you know, and that's something that I learned through martial arts. I have a lot of friends that have won the world championships in that. And one of our coaches, I remember him saying, you know, like, you don't become a world champion at the world championships. You're already a world champion when you show up there. Everybody else just hasn't found out yet. So mm-hmm. What that means is you already have a world champion's diet. You already have a world champion's training schedule. You already have a world champion's I don't want to say board of directors, but you have like a panel of coaches and experts and people you turn to, the friends you hang out with, how you invest your time. If you're going to win a gold medal at the Olympics for judo, you know, the general rule of thumb in a lot of martial arts is if I've got 3,000 hours of training and you've got 30 hours messing around in the backyard with your friend, who's going to win the match?
Right.
Right. Like it's just, it's like the biggest lie and the biggest secret and the biggest myth in martial arts is the prodigal child, you know, and science has done all sorts of searching to try and find that. And we all have innate talents, but to really rise above everyone else, you just need that hard work, work and consistency. And, so that's just it, you know, to win the gold at the Olympics. When you show up, your life is so optimized for doing that. So I did that. I took that to heart and surrounded myself with people just doing what I was trying to do. People that were already more successful than I was. And I would just, like I said, volunteer. I would, you know, just eat it, sleep it, breathe it.
And no, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So I don't know if that helps. Is
no, definitely, definitely. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. A lot of great insights there. Absolutely. You know, you mentioned that you're a best-selling business author. Why don't you talk a little bit about your best-selling book?
Sure. Well, yeah. So when I had a martial arts school and I helped grow it to six figures and then I kind of got bored. And again, being an entrepreneur, I like starting and building stuff. I'm not a good maintenance mechanic. I'm not a good manager. So I wanted to build something else. So I put together some travel packages, $10,000 travel packages to go to Japan, back to Japan and do all my favorite things. And I started promoting that, and I also started helping out my friends. Again, like I said, when I was just doing anything and everything I could to help other people, I started to surround myself with a lot of people that were coming to me for answers. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends, he had an office next to mine, and he was running a satellite office of this $1.3-ish million company out of Ottawa, and he was just a little satellite office with just a handful of clients. Kind of like basically a satellite sales rep. And then mm-hmm. He ended up getting promoted to being CEO. And right before I went for my trip to Japan, he's messaging me and like, Daryl, I did it. And he's thanking me and said he wanted to put me on retainer. He just wanted to pay me some money to have me available because, you know, he's going to be CEO of this company. His decisions were going to affect a lot of people. He wanted to have people he could trust as advisors around him. And I had a couple other friends too, flower shop and mechanic shop. And they were seeing success as well. And when I got that retainer check, I was like, wow, this is a lot easier than grinding, trying to sell, you know, $150 a month memberships and having to manage these big classes and that. And I felt like it was a more comfortable model, more lucrative and more sustainable and just less, more money, less effort.
Yeah.
And I realized the power of the knowledge and what it was doing for their businesses and for my friends. So I decided to write a few different books. I did one that was, forget the name, forgive me. It has been a while, but it was like primitive business tools, checklists and something else. And it was just stats that I used to follow all the time. Just, I had a little cue card that I used tape to kind of like laminate it. And I used to carry it around with me. And every day I would look at it and I'd be like, these are like the only things I care about. And that's how I would like wake up every day and be like, what are these numbers? Like, who's working on this? Who's working on that number? Who's working on that number? And so I put one book. It's not a big book at all. I put that together. And what I wanted to do is, it was a market test. So I wrote three books. One was on these, you know, numbers and checklists and stuff that I would use. And the other one was on business success secrets. And it was talking about how to structure a business, how to build it to scale, how to make sure your customers are satisfied, that sort of thing. And then there was one that was more about marketing and either launching a product or testing a new marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. And it was called Ancient Secrets of Lead Generation, Your Guide to Better Leads with Less Effort. And that book really started to take off. I had them up on Amazon, I started to promote them, and yeah, I mean, I just started putting some more marketing firepower behind that one title once I realized that that was the one people were enjoying the most, or at least downloading better than the others, and yeah, sure enough, it hit number one, and I took a screenshot of it, and I used that, and then local television and radio newspapers wanted to interview me, and I have a new book that I'm working on now. It's called Tribal Marketing, How to Double Your Business in 12 Months or Less. So I don't have the release date yet, but it's on its, I want to say it's final proof edit, but probably be another two iterations. So maybe end of this year, maybe early next year. But yeah, so there's that.
Cool. Why don't you tell us one thing that people can look forward to in that one?
Well, what it does is it talks about, so a lot of owners make different, because most small businesses, especially, it's all about the owner and they're the focal point of everything, or they're just skilled at what they do. They're not necessarily business savvy, or, and in no way is that a dig at them, but it's just, you know, you're really good at doing X for people, or you really enjoy doing X and you'd love to get paid to do it. And so they build the business from that aspect. And so the tribal marketing, it talks about how you have different relationships with different types of customers and how to build out your communications so you can scale. So again, using that rule of 10,000, you know, if you got 10,000 leads, how would you talk to them? And there's different tribes in your business. So there's a tribe of people who know you, but you don't know them. And you have a certain type of relationship with them. There's people who know you but haven't bought yet. There's people who know you and have bought but haven't bought a second time. There's people that bought from you and then they've disappeared for whatever reason. And so each of these is a potential source of new business. And there's more of them that I go over in the book. And that's why I say you can double your business in 12 months or less, because if you have, you know, a proven and tested strategy and you just start implementing it and you have like a customer reactivation campaign and you find a way to do it in a way that's personal, but also scalable. And also if you can automate it, I mean, that's just, how do you not make more money from that sort of thing? Even if you only convert 10% of the people who buy from you and then disappear into buying again, it's, in a lot of ways, it's almost free money, because the most expensive thing is to get someone to buy from you the first time. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the most expensive thing. So in the book, that's kind of what we cover, is these different groups of people, the different tribes, identifying the tribes, giving people some ones that are pretty standard, you know, and then how to identify a new tribe, and then how to set up and operate the automated marketing systems to communicate with them, and just different strategies and tactics to double your business and grow your business. So in fact, I think in the first chapter, I start off with just a really basic formula that's not tied to any tribal marketing or anything, just a really basic formula that you can use to find holes in your business and already kind of plug those holes and increase revenues and double your business. So it's cool. It's a good pet project. It's been sitting there for over a year now. I've just been so sidetracked with other campaigns and working with clients and just other stuff that I've been doing, a lot of travel too. but no, I've got somebody else looking at the book, and I'm going to get some notes from them on things I need to do to update it. And then, like I said, one or two more editing cycles, and then it should be ready to go. So,
awesome. So let me ask you a little bit more about tribal marketing. Is when you're cultivating these lists, as you call them, is how do you go about doing that in an effective way?
Can you explain your question a little bit more? I mean, that's...
Well, you mentioned that you have different lists, you know, people who have bought multiple times, maybe people who have bought once and then never came back. And so how do you manage those lists in a way like let's say we're going after the group who've only spent once.
Right.
Then how do you create something for them that goes specifically to them? What's like the process that you use to do that?
Well, yeah. So first of all, you have to think of what makes sense. It's not just about selling a bunch of crap to someone. It's about solving problems. And I often start my talks with this, and a lot of people, clients I work with, we often spend a lot of time just identifying what is the problem that they're solving for people. So really example is, let's say you install pools. Right. So the problem is that they want to make better use of their backyard. They want to have it be, you know, fun in the sun. They want to be able to have people over for barbecues and dinners. Right. And they just want it to improve the aesthetics of the backyard, as well as, you know, just being able to enjoy themselves at home. So you install the pool. Well, now that you've installed the pool, you've solved that problem. But there's a new suite of problems that have been created. They need patio furniture. Maybe the kids need swimming lessons. Do they have a proper fence? You know, that's probably an add-on that you would include if they didn't have one, or if they had a fence, then it should be updated. Those are all upsells that you could then make to the same client. And even if it's not your business that's fulfilling the work, you can build a strategic alliance with another business and get a referral fee or a percent, like a subcontractor. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there's all these little ways that you can handle that, and you need to plan that out first and foremost. Because if you know that you've got a checklist, all right, well, when we install a pool, we have to make sure that they've got a fence, check. And after the pool's installed, then we send them a package, you know, kind of like a not a welcome package, but almost like a, you know, thank you for doing business with us. Here's what you should know about maintaining your new pool, right? Here's some options. And in that, you could include communications about, you know, so-and-so's schedule for swimming lessons. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're interested, we can buy our book for $29 or our training kit for $29 about pets in your pool, or like just whatever, however you can fit that in, right? Certain patio packages that now you can, hey, we built the pool. Maybe you want to consider upgrading your patio furniture. You know, here's some furniture sets. And so you can have those planned out, and it's a sequential step, because it happens as soon as the pool construction is complete. That's the trigger for when you send out that next package. Mm-hmm. And that's where how you would plan that and how you would build that out. I mean, that's where you would find, and now everybody gets that step, and now it becomes a process. And then it's like, and then especially if it was a direct mail package, that's something that's just printed and delivered. You don't need to have a one-on-one face-to-face conversation for that. They might call your customer service line. That's fine. But by then they're already interested. Right.
So yeah.
That's where now you're able to do that. That's just an example of one way you could plan something like that out and have it scale. And again, that's where you're just solving problems. And often when you solve one problem, new problems open up. And a great place to look for that is if you go on Amazon and you can look up products and look at the reviews and look at the negative reviews of the products. A lot of times the negative reviews are talking about things the product is lacking, problems that product did not solve. And that just can be a really good lead into new products you can develop, new business you want to launch, and what happens next. Because something a lot of people I don't want to get into a big philosophical debate, but there's no utopia. Because as soon as you get what you want something else. Mm-hmm. And so there's just going to be an endless line of innovation and refinement and optimization. And it's just history repeating itself. So... does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that absolutely did. Yeah, thank you very much. And I guess to kind of add on to that is, a lot of people I'm sure out there listening would have problems maybe cultivating those lists or getting those lists in the appropriate functions they have. I know the example that you gave with the pool is extremely functional, and that makes a lot of sense. But maybe I mean, how do you manage your list? How do you manage who goes where and how that goes? Do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, there's different tools and different software, and I'm going to refrain from suggesting any in particular just because I think the content in this podcast is kind of timeless. So mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if they're listening to it now or 10 years from now. I think the same principles apply. But I mean, essentially, it's a phone book of people. If you open up your phone right now and you wanted to go see a movie, you could go through all the contacts and you'd be able to pull out people that you know you can. Oh, I'm not going to message grandma, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, or maybe you are going to message grandma. It depends on what movie you're seeing. And so that's basically it. And a lot of businesses, they're not even keeping track of people. You know, they just, it's whoever the staff recognize because they're around often. There's, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody recognizes that a business needs regulars to be able to stay afloat because it's I don't want to say free money, but it's cheaper to make the sale.
But how
many people are actively creating programs to encourage people to become repeat buyers? How many, right? How many people are keeping in touch with someone and saying happy birthday like you would to a friend? Things like that. So that's where software is something that really helps people. And there's a lot of different tools. But I mean, it really comes, you can't regress a phone book. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a phone book of people and your relationship with them. And so in your phone book, you've got, you know, maybe you've got, I don't know if you're married or not, but you've got girls you've been on a date with. You've got buddies you go play. Like, there's a thing called friends for a reason, friends for a season, and friends for life. And in business, we have lots of friends for a specific reason. Mm-hmm. And so when you know that reason, you just group those people together, you know, and that's kind of how you create a list in your phone book. I have texting groups. You know, I have certain clients that I coach them about a specific problem that they're having in their business. Well, we have a text circle that way we can all just text each other at the same time and it goes out to everybody in the group. You know, and that's like one list. And that's more fulfilling on my end, but in your business, it's leads that you have that haven't converted. That goes into one list. And you can even break that down by time segment. You know, leads that we've had in the last 30 days, leads that we've had that haven't bought in the last 6 months, leads that you can get really granular about it. And that's where a lot of businesses don't do this thinking of the scale of 10,000. So perfect example is, you know, like there's a pizza shop nearby and they do like a, you know, buy one, get one free promotion. And it works like gangbusters. The place is packed. The restaurant's full. And you're like, wow, that's great. And then they, you know, what are we going to do next? And they totally forget about that promotion that they did. And, you know, 2-3 years later, they get the idea, oh, maybe we should do that again. But why wait 2 or 3 years? Why not do it every month, every other month? You know what I mean? Like now all of a sudden, you know, you do 10 things in a year, 4 of them work really well. You get rid of the other 6, you do another 10, you uh-huh. know, and you just keep, uh-huh. you just kind of keep repeating. And then you find that certain people enjoy a certain benefit. Maybe the 2-for-1 is your best performing offer. So now you've got a campaign where you're targeting new movers. You can buy lists in almost any, and especially in America, you can buy lists of names in your city for new people that have moved to the area, certain time frames, and they're the ones that you send that promotion to. You know, and they come in with their coupon and they redeem it. And so that's where now you've got a promotion for that tribe, the tribe of new movers to your zip code area. Right? Like, do you see how that works?
Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, no, thank you. That was articulated very well.
So, yeah.
So let me ask you your, you know, what I like to ask a lot of guests to come on the show is biggest mistakes that they've made in their business career. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made?
You know, that's a good question. And it's kind of tough to answer because, I mean, for a lot of people, they probably answer, you know, hesitation, procrastination. That's probably one of the biggest mistakes, is just not doing more faster. But it's, don't get mad, but I'm going to be kind of vague about this. But even that's tough to say because timing is an important thing as well. Sometimes you need to make the mistake to learn the lesson. You know, now, you, like, for example, until I filled my schedule doing freelance work, I never valued and appreciated why I would want to be able to scale, why I would want to train a team to be able to do the stuff that I do, why, like, you know, why that stuff becomes important, because I never had that problem. So, I mean, a lot of the mistakes, I think the biggest mistake for a lot of people is, one, not getting a mentor, two, not surrounding yourself with like-minded individuals. And I think a really big mistake a lot of people make is really, really poor time management, really poor time management. You know, I remember when I was a kid, my dad once, we were driving, and I forget how it came up, but he said something that really, I totally zoned out and just was lost in thought about it for a long time. He said something that I'd said, yeah, but we're just humans, we're just animals. And he was like, well, we're also part plant. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, think about it. And I started thinking about it, and I just went down this huge tangent of thoughts. And, you know, we lay out routes. You know, a lot of other animals, they travel. They're nomadic. But humans, we stop and we lay out routes. The other thing is that also whatever we focus on grows. And that's when a plant sits there, all a plant does is it waits for sunlight, water, and nutrients. That's all it waits for. And as soon as it has all three of those, it starts growing. And if any of those are missing, it's just sitting there trying to preserve itself from decay. And if it doesn't get them, decay sets in. But as soon as it gets those, it starts growing again. And your time is like that. If I spend all day, every day, you know, just reading and trying to improve my skill set in one thing, you know, that's the whole 10,000 hours thing, right? Malcolm Gladwell helped popularize. Well, how do you get the 10,000 hours? You focus on it. So a lot of people have really poor time management where they're just, you know, they're talking to people that they don't really, you know, they let other people dedicate their time for them, or, you know, they spend 4 hours a day watching television, and the only thing that changes, and they might be like, oh, I need to relax, you know, and that's okay, but could you relax and read a book? Could you relax and get on the phone and talk to a friend about a business problem that they're having? So that way it's still somehow related, and even though it's not directly related, at least it's better than, you know, now you what's grown is your knowledge of five more SpongeBob episodes, right? Like, yeah. And that's just it. Like, if you took track of an inventory of how you spend your time in a day, it's not like you have to become some uptight robot that all you do is work. But if it's a serious goal for you to become an expert at something or to become really proficient at something, it's really easy to find, you know, new ways. Like for me, I would just watch seminar footage or documentaries or stuff. And I still watch like action movies and whatever, you know, with my friends, because that's time I plan to relax, and you need to do that. But like I said, you know, oh, I don't need to watch television. I don't need to watch Family Guy. You know, I'm gonna just call up some friends and just talk about what's going on with them and their business. I'm gonna, you know, go to the library or have coffee and just write out and just, you know, just have free form, you know, just if you're an entrepreneur, just let my visions kind of go crazy, right? Like just something that's more related than that. So that's a huge mistake I think myself and other people have had. But it's hard to say anything's a mistake because, you know, everything I'm not made me everything I am. And a lot of those mistakes I needed because it was just, you know, it's that process of trial and error. And I'm actually afraid of people that have flawless track records because they don't know what it means to fail. They don't know the pain. They don't have that deterrent, and no one is that gifted. And so that's kind of it. Like just do more. That's kind of the biggest thing. I should have done more.
Yeah. All right, good. Yeah, no, that's a great answer. And how about success wise? Do you have maybe your greatest success story or a specific example, maybe either somebody you helped or in your own business, some specific example of success you've experienced?
Do you want like as far as like a career highlight or the sense of having felt of helping somebody else, a sense of like having accomplished something great? Yeah, because
whatever you think is best.
For me right now, one of the things that really stands out in my mind's eye was just being able to pay back. So I was an orphan as a child, and I was adopted, and then my adopted father passed away from cancer, and my adopted mom and I moved around, and she met some other guys. So now I have her and my step adopted dad, and just always felt very grateful for, you know, just having been given a home to grow up in and that, and certainly wasn't easy. But for me, I think like even this summer, for me, it was like a real milestone. We've had a lot of people in our family pass away, a couple relatives and some people that were very close family friends in the last year. And for me, it was a real sense of accomplishment to be able to go up and visit my parents, you know, to buy a new car. You know, and it's not necessarily like, you know, it's not $100,000 vehicle, but it's a nice new 2014 hybrid car, and then take my dad on a road trip, cover all the expenses, you know, do the little tours that he wanted to do and kind of just do that for him. Of course for myself as well, but then to come back and then to fly my mom down and have both my parents here and to make sure they experience all the luxuries and, you know, and just the nice little things, going out to nice restaurants and nice dinners, going to nice golf cart courses, just get them see that kind of life, and then to pay all their expenses and send them home with some money in their pocket. I mean, for me, just having been someone who was taken in And now being able to like have someone under my wing in that sense and be able to give back like that, that was a phenomenal milestone. Other milestones, of course, is there's no sort of sense of gratification like when someone you've been helping or coaching or a student, when they achieve some sort of level of success. A week ago, went to this conference called the Titans of Direct Response. It was a phenomenal event, and I had one of my coaching clients come. She flew in from Dubai, and it was just a real sense of satisfaction to be at that event with these living legends and have them, you know, compliment my client on things that I'd helped her accomplish, and to see her glow and kind of be treated like a mini celebrity there, one from being from afar, but two from just her knowledge and her prowess and her skills that she's developed. I think that's something that, that's being able to do good for the people who've taken care of you, and then seeing that what you teach others helps them be successful. I mean, for me as a man, I feel like there's really two of the greatest things you can accomplish as a man in your life. And one is to achieve the greatest heights of your career and be an industry leader at what you do and be able to bring others up and help them get the same level of success. Mm-hmm. And then to raise a family, a happy, healthy family. And I don't have that going yet, but, you know, when we talk about success, you know, those two are kind of hard to top beyond just making sure you've got good health and just taking care of your loved ones. So
that's a great answer, Daryl. And now let's say, you know, you mentioned that you were traveling from one side of Canada, that you wanted to move to the west coast of Canada, and that you had done everything back then. If you could give that kid one piece of advice before you started emailing those, you know, trying to get those job offers, one piece of advice to that kid back then, what would that piece of advice be?
If I could go back, talk to myself, there's something like, I am a firm believer. There's Jim Rohn quote that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And that would probably be my biggest tip, would just, because I've, you know, even before I sent those emails, I don't know if I would have absorbed that at the time, but I didn't even know what my problem was once I had the bank loan approved and I had the investors trust me, you know, entrust me with that cash. And I just had no support network. I was afraid, and I let the fear overcome me. And of course, I'm grateful for where I am now, but if I had had people and friends who would have been excited about the opportunity and been able to be more objective, who knows what I would have been able to accomplish. So it would definitely be something along the lines of, you need to align yourself with people who are either where you want to be or are trying to get there. And you need to make, you know, it's funny, a friend of mine is a psychiatrist. He's working a couple of books himself. And he was saying to me that, you know, a lot of people, they often confuse, like, we're social creatures, humans, and we survive in social networks, but there's two types of social networks. There's people that are like gazelles, and if there's a pack of gazelles and, you know, a lioness jumps out at them, they all scatter. It's every gazelle for themselves, right? They just take off. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the flip side, if you have a wolf pack and one of the wolves is being attacked by a bear, what do the other wolves do? They jump in and they help win the fight. They attack the bear. And so, again, just surrounding yourself with people is one thing, but if you're surrounded by a bunch of gazelles, you know, you can be left in the dark often. So you really need to build those strong relationships with a mentor and with like-minded people. You just need to soak in and absorb it and just be that person and recognize that you have to become the person who can easily achieve your goals. You know, you don't want to show up and just squeak by, you know, or have someone be lenient, and that's how you get through. You have to build yourself up to that level to where you can just walk across that line and walk over to the other side. And the best way to do that is just to surround yourself with a community of people that are doing the same thing.
Oh, actually, that's a great answer. And so what you're saying is we all need to create our own wolf packs.
Yeah, exactly.
A la Hangover.
Yeah. That was a great movie.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. How about moving forward here? What's something cool that you're working on or that you got something going on? I know you mentioned your book already, but is there anything else you're working on?
Yeah, I've got a course I'm putting together called the 7-Figure Funnel Formula. So one of my most recent accomplishments is with a client where it was funny because he brought in a new president and we're having – we're having a bit of a disagreement, and mostly it stems from him not really believing that there is such a thing as automated marketing and automated income. And but it's real. I built it, and it's generated over $3 million for that company so far. And I have a couple other clients that have hired me to duplicate what I did for this other client for them. And knowing that I don't scale, knowing that if I could get 10,000 clients, and I already have more people asking me to help them than I can help, I'm putting together this course, 7-figure funnel formula, where I'm literally just showing the work that I'm doing with clients. There's lessons, and there's also, like, you know, just candid spy camera stuff, you know, call recordings downloaded there, examples of projects that I'm working on with clients. And part of it is because I want to just help other people. I have a goal. I want to help create 200 new millionaire or multimillionaire business owner clients who solve world problems with their entrepreneurship. That's a goal of mine.
Awesome.
And I also, knowing that I've got more people coming to me, and when I do interviews like this, and as just, I'm getting acknowledgement and notoriety, that I've got more work coming my way than I can actually fulfill. So what I ultimately want to do is have a certification program. So take the people who have completed the course, and then I'll have a certain, it's on the books for kind of February, March next year, but mm-hmm. then have a certification program where I can certify people. And then when I have someone come to me, if I can't take them on, I can at least kind of outsource it, not necessarily outsource it, but I can hand it off to someone. And like I mentioned before with the pool, maybe, you know, I only get a small percentage, but, and then I'm still there, that person's still tied to me, and I'm able to coach them through it and so that way the client gets what they need, and I'm able to leverage myself, and we just learn how to help make this world a better place. So,
all right, excellent. That sounds pretty awesome. So that brings us to our last question, which is two parts. And the first part is to define success.
Success is being able to do what you want, where you want, with who you want, at the price and terms you want, or you don't have to do it at all. And I could even alter that from a non-business perspective. Just success is whatever it means to you. Success is just forget chasing other people's versions. If you try and chase someone else's definition of success, you'll never be fulfilled. But if you know what success is to you, then that's all you really need. You know, I know some people that are just crazy about trying to make money, but it's like, so what? For what reason? You want to be the richest person in the graveyard? You know, like, at some point, there's a diminishing return on investment. So success is just whatever that means to you. For me, it's just being able to live life on my terms and be able to spend my time how I please. There's a great, you know what? Bear with me. I'm going to look. There's a great quote, and I love it. And in fact, I share it with so many people, and I just shared it with somebody else. Hold on, it's on my phone. But it's a quote, and it's about the difference between work and play. Where is it? This is James Michener. Mm-hmm. And he says, "The master in the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mind and his body, his information and his recreation, his love and his religion. He hardly knows which is which. He simply pursues his vision of excellence at whatever he does, leaving others to decide whether he is working or playing. To him, he is always doing both." And to me, that's what success is.
Excellent. Excellent. So do you consider yourself to be successful? Why or why not?
Somebody just asked me that this morning. I think it's a moving target. I think that I have accomplished a very high percentage of all the life goals and milestones that I've set out for myself. But it doesn't mean that I can now rest on my laurels and, you know, just kick back on the beach and not do anything. I've had successes and failures. And as far as where I am now, like I say, I feel like I've come up on top financially. I've had some great successes. I've had great failures. But right now I'm on a very nice and very big upswing. So I appreciate that. So I would say I have been very successful at what I want. And I can't say that I am successful right now because I've set new goals and I haven't accomplished them yet. So if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And Daryl, thanks so much for coming on the Define Success podcast. It was a real blast chatting with you. Definitely had a lot of information to give, so I really appreciate that. And I know our listeners will as well. If people want to find out more about you, your business, where would you like me to send them?
Sure. I would send people to bestbusinesscoach.ca for Canada. Or, of course, they can look me up on Facebook and social media. But bestbusinesscoach.ca should always redirect them to wherever I am and whatever I have going on at the moment.
All right, excellent. Well, again, Daryl, thanks again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, and hope you have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. You too.